Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back. Another round of Ruthless Aggression. I am Pierce, joined by Rob and Chris. We are about a week away from Elimination Chamber in Saudi Arabia. We'll kind of touch on that in a hot second. We also had the opening of the Great Forbidden Door in AEW, except they actually opened the door and then just let somebody else crawl through it. So we'll talk about that also. But let's start with NXT. We have a special event coming up next week, day after Valentine's Day, NXT Vengeance Day, live from the Performance Center on Sci-Fi. Remember, because Winter Olympics are going on, so all your wrestling that's usually on USA is happening on Sci-Fi. We got a 5-match card as it stands now. Let's start with a singles match for the North American Championship. Carmelo Hayes defending it against Cameron Grimes. This is really just going to be all you, because I don't see any reason why Carmelo Hayes should be losing.
No, I agree. Like, you know, obviously they're kind of pushing him as like the second guy behind Braun right now, which they should be doing. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of how I want to see NXT do things. Like the NXT champion's kind of like your next guy up to the main roster. And then the North American champion's like the next guy to win the NXT championship. Doesn't have to be, you know, perfect every time. It just kind of feels like that's how it should go here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, still like Cameron Grimes quite a bit. I think it'll be a good match, but yeah, I think just good opportunity for Carmelo to pick up another win. Just kind of add to, you know, he's, had a kind of run of success and just kind of keep adding to that and keep going and see what they do for him at the Mania takeover.
Yeah. NXT Women's Tag Team Championship, Toxic Attraction, will defend against Indy and Persia Parada. A nice little tag team. They're fine, but, well, I mean, they're fine and they're fine, but I'm going to go with Toxic Attraction. Continuing to build off what them and Mandy are building. Mandy does not have a match on this card, so I don't think it's a purpose of splitting them up as far as the championships go.
Yeah, I agree. You know, not yet. Maybe, you know, Mania you do it and then you call them up to the main roster. But I do want to ask you, and I'll ask Chris too when he gets back here, he just stepped out for a moment. Like, do you think Toxic Attraction, kind of as they are right now, can go to the main roster and be successful, or are they going to have to change up the act a little bit?
Not that they're going to have to change up the act a little bit. I just think that you can maximize it if you let them hang around for a little bit. You know, of the women that are down in NXT that have no business left in NXT and need to be called up, Io Shirai, Raquel Gonzalez, Dakota Kai, thank you. She was on tip of my tongue. That's kind of it. You know, that's kind of it of the girls that I think the main roster could use. Toxic Attraction can go on the main roster, and I think they could still be successful, but I think there's still a little bit left to do in NXT in order to maximize your investment on it once they finally hit the main roster. So I don't want to rush them. I don't want to rush them at all. They're getting perfect shine on NXT. That's where they belong right now, because if they go up to the main roster, at least at this point in time, you know, we could talk about you know, overshadowing and shit, but either they're going to be overshadowed or some other girls that aren't getting the screen time that they should be getting. You know, we talk about how the cover's bare on the women's side, but like, yo, like you look at women like Shotzi, and yeah. Shotzi's kind of like on the fringe of falling into Ember Moon territory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? And I mean, and that's a good point. Like, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, you know, Toxic Attraction could go up and like they would probably be fine, but I don't know that they're like the answer to the issues in the women's division. And again, they're fine at NXT. You know, if you're going to have women's tag championships, you need tag teams. And they're a fine one. You know, they're cohesive. And I think, you know, there is some money in a singles push for, I think, either of Gigi or JC at some point. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're fine staying down there for now. But I've seen people kind of be like, oh, you know, after Mania, they could be a team that gets called up. And I don't really see it.
Why yeah. don't you see it?
Well,
because I can see it.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you, too. So I'm glad, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. First of all, when it comes to Toxic Attraction, I don't know how deep we are in here. I had to go take go let the dogs inside.
Well, my original question was, like, but, do you think the act on the main roster can stay how it is right now? Because it's not really a main roster act. It's different than what we've seen up there.
Okay, so push them in a different direction and have motivation and thoughtfulness behind them. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to Toxic Attraction, in my opinion, even though I wouldn't necessarily pull the trigger on Cora to be champion yet, because she's still 21, she doesn't need it yet.
Yeah.
I would put Mandy back on the main roster after Mania. The job is done. Mm-hmm. The job's finished. They did what they had to do, and she's right on the right track now. And she went hold for hold with Kaylee Ray this past Tuesday. It's no small feat, it's no small task. She's been very good. They got what they needed out of her, so now they can bring her up. It's just like if you have, you know, a prospect in your system in baseball who you want to be good, maybe they weren't progressing well, you know, up in the bigs, so you sent them back down for a stint. They're doing good again. Let's see what happens again with her.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
There's no point. I don't. She's hit her ceiling already there.
Yeah.
Already. You don't have any up. There's no. I don't think that there's anything that you can really tap into right now that you can't already do.
But I guess my whole thing for keeping her down there is, A, has the group hit their ceiling? And B, if you move them up, somebody's going to have to suffer. One of them girls that's on the main roster right now, or even them, is going to have to get less screen time. And you already have a problem with the cover being bare. And then on top of that, the ladies that you have right now that are just sitting and catering aren't doing much to really pop anybody.
Well, because I guess the question is, where would you slot them? Because I would slot them on Raw. I would have Mandy be Bianca's first feud after she wins the title.
That'd be interesting.
There's no reason to trot Bayley out there after she just came back just to lose again. I don't care if they have quote unquote unfinished business. They truly do not. Bianca won that feud in Hell in a Cell. I said it at the time in the summer. They didn't need to do the I Quit match. It was gratuitous. So it's like, okay, after Mania, who are your potential challengers for her? Besides Nikki A.S.H., there's not really anyone that they could slot in there and have it make sense. Because you don't want to do Bianca Rhea yet.
No.
That's a stadium show match.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to – there's no point in feeding Liv to her. That doesn't add up or work. So – I mean, they already did enough with Carmella and Zelina, so they need somebody fresh and someone new.
What about heel Raquel Gonzalez?
A heel Raquel would be fine too.
We both can agree that, like,
I'd be fine with that too. Yeah, I'd be fine with that too because again, it's a fresh face.
Yeah,
that's what they need fresher faces, mm-hmm. and they also just need more thoughtfulness.
That's fair
because they had fresh faces last summer, and two of them fizzled out.
Yeah,
for one reason or another. And Shotzi, I know you talked about her. I'm kind of just, you know, that kind of is what it is because she's been working. She said she's worked through injuries. She's obviously experienced a lot of loss. I know she lost her father recently and also lost her stepfather last year. So she's been going through it. So when it comes to her, I'm giving the situation a bit of a pass.
All right.
They have to realign her. But SmackDown's problem is everything is just under Charlotte's umbrella, and no disrespect to Charlotte, but that's not working out for anybody, including her, because she's in the midst of what I think is an all-time bad title.
Yeah, it's terrible. Fucking terrible.
But yes, I think Toxic Trash is going to retain their titles.
So. Yes, agree.
Yeah.
Agree. Because they're facing Indy and Persia, right?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah, no, I think Toxic Trash will win.
Yeah. What they're calling a weaponized steel cage match, whatever. Pete Dunne and Tony D'Angelo.
This is a waste of time.
I mean, it's a waste of time.
Pete Dunne up. Why is he still down there?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is a waste of time for both. I think D'Angelo could be doing something different right now, and Dunne could obviously be up on the main roster.
Yeah, it kind of feels like the crowbar match should have kind of been it for this.
Well, why? Because they had a funeral happen.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a waste of everyone's time. But I think just based on the letter of the law when it comes to booking, Dunne will probably win. I think D'Angelo will have a decent showing in a plunder brawl. It'll be fun and fine, but I think Dunne ultimately wins. Just because he's the face in this feud.
Yeah, that's fair.
And D'Angelo loses nothing by losing to Pete Dunne. But again, this is a way. This better be the end of it. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Spin them off. 100% agree.
Yeah,
I 100% agree with you. This needs to not be a thing. The finals of the men's Dusty Tag Team Classic. They'll receive a future NXT Tag Team Championship match. The defending Dusty Cup champions MSK against Creed Brothers. I'm going to go with the Creed Brothers. They looked impressive last night. I'm liking their look. Malcolm Bivens got them a little bit hyped up. They're getting some love from the community. And MSK doesn't need anything else down in NXT 2.0. They really could have gone up a year ago and been perfectly fine. Now is the time, once we get past WrestleMania, call up MSK. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's fucking do it already.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. The Creed Brothers have really been impressive the past couple months. It's really taken to it quickly. No reason not to just keep pushing those guys.
Yeah, agreed. I think Creed Bros win. MSK will do what they got to do to make them look good. They only spent a year there. They only need a year there.
I 100%. And for the NXT champion, they can
have bangers with the Usos and New Day, Alpha Academy, RK-Bro, whoever.
Yeah,
doesn't really matter what brand they're on to me. For the NXT championship, Santos Escobar will challenge Bron Breakker. There's no way in hell that Bron Breakker's losing the championship. I mean, honestly, I don't know what else Santos Escobar and that whole faction got left to do.
Well,
down there, like, yeah, and win the NXT Tag Team Championships, win the NXT Women's Championship. They ain't got to do all that.
No,
the problem with Santos Escobar is they've completely lost all momentum with him with that stupid feud with Zion Quinn.
Yeah,
he's a complete afterthought, and he also was a complete afterthought when Dolph came out this past Tuesday.
I mean, it'll be a good match.
It'll be good, but I'm not nearly as invested in Santos as I was like a year ago or even like a year and a half, and that's a problem.
But I also don't think the people that I watch in NXT week in and week out are watching WWE week in and week out. And Santos's talent will be able to shine.
I agree. I'm just saying that they've definitely lost some momentum on him.
No, I agree.
Zion Quinn can do.
You could still call him up though. And
of course you could, but again, like,
they're going to be a solid mid-card, faction. Like, nobody's expecting Santos Escobar to come up to the main roster. And, he's going to have the expectations of, what's my man, Mr. Flair. I would be shocked if we're looking at Santos Escobar and we're seeing Andrade. And we're seeing Andrade trajectory. Because that man's, he's close to 40.
Yeah.
He'll be 38 in April. All right. So if you're looking at like Santos Escobar, like, damn, he needs to have a championship reign. No, it's really not even about Santos. If Santos can be a really good mid card and just like, a great face to look at and a great worker, that's tremendous. It's kind of more about whether or not. I'm gonna call him DJZ. Whether or not Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza can get over as a tag team or as good worker. Well, no, DJ Z is a good fucking worker, but you know, on a tag team scene in WWE, it's about getting Alexa Lopez, who is stunning, who can be that kind of Latina face for the company that they're missing. Thank you. I'm so glad you didn't get it. Do they even have one right now? Well, never mind. Do they have a second one? Female Latin star? Because I don't
know. No,
I mean, it depends.
I literally second.
You have Bailey and you have Zelina.
Well, yeah, Zelina's a star.
She's been pushed. But star, at minimum, though. She's at least been pushed.
But I guess I was looking for star. This is the operative thing here. So yeah, no, like, yeah, I think an Alexa Lopez would be massive for that community. So it's more about getting those folks over.
I guess you could consider a Priest as well.
Well, I meant female.
Oh yeah, okay, that's fair. Yeah, yes. That's fair. Didn't know if it was all encompassing or just that. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But yeah, I mean, Braun's obviously winning, but I think it just sucks that Santos was stuck in that feud and it did nothing for him. So he's not coming into this match with, I think, as much buzz as, you know, he was gathering for himself like
about a year ago. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, that's really the only unfortunate thing, I think.
And that's fair. That's 100% fair.
And obviously, not everyone is always going to, you know, be on the right side of the coin. It's just unfortunate. That's all.
Yeah. Keith Lee made his AEW debut like we all expected. He went 50-50 with the dude who's like 160 pounds. Not a great way to debut Keith Lee, but, you know, everyone's excited because everyone loves Keith Lee.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, like, I think the presentation was very good, and I think, you know, he looked good. He was good in the ring, but, yeah, I don't really love him, you know, going 50-50 with Isaiah Cassidy, who I think he was very good in this match. He sold for him, he bumped for him. Maybe that's what matters, but like, I don't know. But like,
Keith isn't that kind of big man wrestler.
But
I think you know, he could be, but he's obviously not interested in doing that.
Yeah, that's the thing. We saw that, you know, when he was going 30 minutes with Adam Cole, too. Like, he doesn't want to just overpower guys, I guess. He wants to, you know, do his flips and stuff. And, you know, it is what it is. People like. I mean, I'm happy for him. I hope it works out. Right. You know, I do have some reservations going into it. Like, what's his ceiling here? Because I don't think it's really that much higher than it would have been in WWE.
I 100% agree. That's something I was thinking when he was making his walk out. I'm just like, all right, now what do you do with Keith Lee? Are you positioning him as a top star within the company? Because we just went through this whole diversity thing with NXT or with AEW, and now you have a near ready made black superstar. Are you just going to stick him in mid card? What are you going to do with him? It's kind of like where I'm at with Keith Lee.
Yeah, because it feels like, you know, he's in this Face the Revolution ladder match now, and he'll probably win it, but then he'll get like a title match on TV, and then where do you go from there? You know, that's the thing. Like, I don't have a problem with it. You know, maybe they'll figure it out, maybe they won't, but yeah, I mean, again, I like the presentation overall of him, but yeah, we'll see how things look, you know, next week if he's around. It's easy to do well on the first night in. It's what you do after that really counts.
Bingo.
Yeah,
and I guess this is just with basically everything. I'm just like, it's cool. I'm excited for him and whatnot, but like, I'm left wondering, like, okay, what is next? What are you going to do to intrigue me? Because if you're gonna inevitably do what I think they'll do, and that'll probably end up being Keith versus Cole again. It's like, okay.
Well, I don't know if Cole's gonna beat Hangman, but
no, I'm just saying that they'll inevitably have them spin towards each other, because of course they will, because they seem adamant about bringing everybody from Black and Gold NXT over there. So,
well, yeah,
it's just like, you know, you if you have someone like him, you have to create appeal, and it's like you said, with, you know, expectations and whatnot, I don't know if they're going to be met.
Are you annoyed that the formula of AEW is very much NXT 1.5?
I personally, like, it kind of is what it is, but I do see, you know, the flaw in trying to do that when much of, I shouldn't say much of, but at least some of the AEW fan base didn't really like NXT. They didn't really care for the people who were there. And now it's like, okay, you're trying to get me invested in your show by putting people who I wasn't interested in on your show now. It's like, oh, now you can care about them. It's like,
That happens. That happens in sports.
I mean, yeah, but I'm just saying that, like, I think it's a problem. Or it just could raise to be a potential
issue. But it's just something that happens in sports too. Like, you know, if someone isn't on your team and then you don't like them and then they are on your team, you start to like it.
If I'm not interested in, I'm not going to like them.
Yeah. It is a little different with wrestling in that regard, but yeah, I don't know.
I don't think it is that much different, because it's just like, it's basically you're positioning them probably in similar positions or at least somewhat slightly lower. And it's like, if I wasn't invested in this person in one place, why would I be invested in them in this place?
That's
fair.
Like, I mean, I'll watch it. When I say that I want to see wrestlers in like other promotions, it's like, I have interest in them. I would like to see, like, I'm interested in watching Keith Lee because I like Keith Lee. If it was someone like freaking Cross,
Killer Cross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, why would I care about that? Or if I was somebody who, you know, didn't like Adam Cole when he was in NXT, why would I suddenly care about him if he was in there? Because he's doing the same shit that he did to Peeve me if he did.
Maybe it's because, like, it's wild to us that you didn't like Adam Cole in NXT. I'm just saying.
No, yeah, I know that there are people who don't.
Yeah.
They exist. I've seen the arguments. I can see what they were saying, and I can respect them and see what they're saying.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, again, like, I get it.
I'm not saying that that's how I feel. I've seen people express that, and I think that, you know, it's a legitimate complaint.
Yeah.
Or critique, or whatever you want to call it. I don't care what you call it.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, again, either way, you know, I hope for the best for Keith, and
yes,
you know, hope he's successful.
Agreed. Love Keith. He's the man. Not the only debut on AEW, though. Jay White appeared in a backstage segment. Jay White still contracted by New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's been working over here in the States for New Japan Strong. I'm a little upset because I found out that the New Japan show WrestleMania weekend will be a Strong taping, and that kind of peeves me. I guess I gotta wait to see what shakes out with that. But I mean, besides that, Jay White's a big get. Jay White's somebody that when he first came on the scene in New Japan, I wasn't really feeling him. He didn't have the look. He's really worked to get the look down pat. He's gotten tremendously better in the ring. And now here he is on AEW television. He's worked with a lot of the same guys before. I think there's a lot of potential with Jay White in AEW. Really somebody I wish would find his way in the old NXT, but I mean, there's no way he would have been in NXT 2.0. So yeah, this is a good landing spot. If this is a landing spot.
Yeah. I don't know if he's just going to be there for, you know, a month or whatever till Mania. And then he's going to go back to Japan. I don't know, you know, they're scheduled in Japan at the moment, but you know, it's interesting enough. You know, I've not really seen him wrestle all that much. So if they do that on AEW, I'm excited to, you know, watch him, and a lot of people hype him up. So
yeah, I was going to say, I'm very happy for the people who are Jay White fans. I personally have not seen a match of his. It doesn't mean that I've gone out of my way to not see one. I just haven't seen one yet. But everyone says that, you know, he's this amazing wrestler. So I'm going to take those people's word for it, because if the shoe was on the other foot and someone was like, wow, I've never seen Bayley, how good is she? I would be that guy.
Yeah.
I would hype them up. I would hype her up like crazy to them.
Fair, yeah.
So I will take the word of the super fans here.
Don't know what else we got going on to talk about, to be honest with you, unless you are excited that Goldberg's back. Yay. What do you guys think about the reports that some folks backstage are upset that Big E's been kind of shuffled lower down the card?
I mean,
I kind of don't buy it. I mean, well, I guess I should say it seemed like from the report that it was a lot of speculative nonsense. So I don't know. I mean, I can see obviously people having camaraderie for someone who's very likable. That makes sense. But I mean, where we you know, fall in line with stuff like that? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Like, it sucks that the New Day guys are, you know, at the end of the day, just the New Day guys.
Yeah,
you
know? But at the same time, it's not like that's a slight
against. No, but, you know, when you see two of them win the title and, you know, you talked about Woods was King of the Ring, they didn't really do anything with it. Just, it is a little unfortunate. I can see it, you know.
That's fair. I think, as with anything, I think that you can have a right to be frustrated, but also, like, you have to temper it a little bit.
Yeah. I mean,
well, that's a problem with everything. Everyone always overreacts to everything.
It's
not even just this.
It is like a perception thing too, though, because, like, you know, they could say, you know, hey, tomorrow on SmackDown we're doing, you know, Big E against Roman for the title, and people would be, you know, just right back excited about it.
Would they say, oh, why didn't you build to this?
Well,
this, that, why is it happening on a random SmackDown?
Exactly.
In a vacuum, they'd be excited about it.
I agree, but I'm just saying, you know, there's always going
to be. Why don't you have a plan for this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, there's probably a bigger conversation to have about, like, you know, the reliance on Brock and having him come in and all that. But
you can do both.
Yeah. You can.
You can.
You really can do both, but it's just that WWE creatively is not smart enough right now to find a way to do all that. They're really not. And they haven't been for years. They hit the panic button, the hit when all else fails button a little bit too fucking much, and it's usually a few people: Roman, Brock, Becky, Charlotte. That's kind of the core four of when we don't know what else to do, put the title on them, put the spotlight on them, and it gets very fucking boring to an extent when you see, you know, folks like Big E, folks like Bianca, you know, folks that you really like and would love to see have enjoyably long reigns, good reigns, be undercut. And then the folks that are getting undercut for, yeah, they're stars, but what the fuck is your plan for them? Do you have a plan for them? Or are you just putting a belt on them? What, because they might pop a live event?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. Like, you know, again, hopefully Big E gets another title shot at some point.
But, like, also, but, like, this is where I have an issue, where it has to be title or bust. For me, I think it should be presentation or bust. If they're presented as big names and big people, it doesn't matter if they're not around the championship.
No, that's fair.
I think what
their problem is, though, is that if you're not champion, it feels like you're nothing. And that's the issue.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because they don't know what the fuck to do when they're not in a championship scene.
And even when they have the mid-card champions, they're not doing too much interesting else, because for the past, like, almost 7 years now, all they've been doing for their mid-card titles really are just open challenges. They're trying to capture the magic again that Cena did, but there was a reason that worked. It had never really been done before.
Yeah.
And then they just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And wow. Now both mid-card titles don't mean shit.
Mm-hmm.
They're both very uninteresting to watch play out, and that's unfair, because there's a lot of quality people who could be mid-card champions that could do really well if they took the same formulas that they used to from the earlier part of this century, but like we said, they don't have that fastball.
Yeah.
So it just becomes, and I mean, the mid-card champion thing, I think that's a problem in the entire industry.
Yeah.
I think that that's an issue everywhere, that a lot of they saw the stuff with the open challenge thing. They do that a lot with the TNT title or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just like, because thinking about it, like, what's the last, like, hot feud for a mid-card title? Was it Miz Dolph? That was 2016. Apollo Big E was fine, but, like, they did too many, as usual, they did too much with
it. Yeah. Yeah. Rey and Andrade.
How many times did they wrestle in 2019? They were great, but, like, at the same time, I remember the matches, not the fact that they were fighting for a title.
Yeah.
And the title should matter to an extent. So that all goes again into presentation. WWE's one of their biggest issues is presentation.
Mm-hmm.
So if Big E and, you know, everyone else is presented as big deals, I'm not concerned if they're not the main champ. I'm concerned when they fail on presentation and not being a champ.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
All right, let's go back to the year 2006. We got 2 weeks to catch up on. We're coming off the heels of the Royal Rumble. Rey Mysterio went, I want to say, 62 minutes to capture the Royal Rumble and a ticket to WrestleMania. But will he get to be able to cash in that ticket? No, you won't. Yes, he will, but no, you won't. John Cena is once again the WWE champion. He won it back from Edge. And Kurt Angle is your World Heavyweight Champion. He retained against Mark Henry. All right, where are we at?
Okay.
Yeah. We got a Super Bowl to talk about, right?
We do.
Yay. We do. Yay.
All right, so we'll start with the music. Sting at number 5 is Stick With You by Pussycat Dolls.
I said Sting was at number 5. I'm like, wait, we were listening to Sting like that in 2006? No, of course not.
Number 4 is Be Without You by Mary J. Blige.
Has Sting done the Super Bowl halftime show? Very random ass question, but why do I feel like I've heard Sting
performing at this? I thought he like showed up at one in 2003. He was part of it, yes.
Okay, yeah, the ones that I didn't watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he did Message in a Bottle with No Doubt.
Oh, that, wow. The only thing I remember about Super Bowl 37 and all their musical choices, do y'all remember that they did a post-game concert?
I think so.
Do you remember who sung the post-game song concert? Think of like really huge songs in white America in 2002, 2003.
Oh, I
know. Yep.
That's funny.
That's really funny.
What's your answer?
Bon Jovi.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah. But the thing is, yeah, Bon Jovi did that, and like it was completely pointless because it pushed back the start time of Alias, which is their lead out show.
Yeah.
It was completely pointless because guess who did the concert for opening night when it was Giants 49ers back in September?
Probably
fucking Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Same goddamn song.
Wow.
I don't know what the obsession was with It's My Life at that point in time.
That was everywhere, man. It was a big song.
And Leia, Shania Twain, No Doubt, and Sting. That is a halftime show. I'm so glad I don't remember. Apparently, Jimmy Iovine produced it. So thanks, I guess.
Number 3 is still Running by Chris Brown. Down to 2 is Grills. And up to number 1 is Check On It by Beyonce.
Oh, man, looking like a lag. Wonderful fucking song.
Yeah, it's very good. Our movies. Number 5, debuting at number 5, Annapolis, which I kind of remember.
Don't remember.
Brokeback Mountain.
It's like a Navy movie.
Yeah, I
trying to James think, Franco, like, Tyrese, Jordana Brewster, Donnie Wahlberg. Yeah, I don't remember this at all.
Yeah. Up to number 4 from number 5 is Brokeback Mountain. Up to number 3, down to number 3, it's Underworld Evolution. Debuting at number 2 is Nanny McPhee, and debuting at number 1, Big Mama's House 2.
Yeah, I don't think we needed a Big Mama's House 2. We definitely didn't need a Big Mama's House 3, but that's really just because like America wants reboots of everything.
Yeah. You know? I mean, 2 was like fine, but not as good as the first one.
2 was a lot more family friendly, and the jokes didn't hit nearly as hard as the first one did. Like, you can get away with a Nutty Professor 2 when, like, you have Janet Jackson in the fucking movie. And it's 4 years after the first movie. Trying to do a Big Mama's House 2 6 years later, there's not much of a, like, you know, big difference within, like, the story. Yeah, no, I wouldn't. It was trash.
Our only piece of wrestling news this week, after WrestleMania, Shawn Michaels is going to slow down a little bit, but he's also not particularly happy because he's not really in on creative meetings anymore, and he's not allowed to fly on the company plane because it's a kind of family-only thing right now. So, you know, Triple H is able to, but he's not. You know, wasn't happy with the Hogan stuff, wasn't happy about the fallout from all that, so I didn't really know he was this upset time. You know, obviously it works out, but...
It's not like Sean can go anywhere else.
Well, that's true. At this point, he's going to go TNA.
Right. Like, Sean's stuck. Sean know that, like, you know, it's Sean. Go ahead.
You can go with Matt Bentley.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Matt Bentley. He can go work with his cousin. Yeah, no, like Sean understands that, or Sean, I hope at this point Sean understands that, like, it's not like it was 10 years prior where, you know, you're the top star in the company, you're getting all this fucking sway. Yeah, your man's is in the family now, but just the landscape of the company, of the industry, is so much different now. Some shit you're just gonna have to Harden's picked last after KD. That's funny. And of course he's not on Team Durant. Like, why would he be? Oh God, that's so funny. I completely forgot where I was at. Yeah, Shawn Michaels ain't in the same standing as he was 10 years ago, man. So like, the whole landscape of the industry has changed. You're not gonna be able to get the same perks that you did before. You know, it's not a big deal if you're not flying on a fucking company plane and you gotta fly first class while everybody else is flying coach. Oh God, company plane? Well, I guess I gotta stretch my legs out in first class.
Yeah.
Come on, exactly. Dude. You don't even have to go to fucking Tuesday, Wednesday shows. Shut up.
Yeah. But yeah,
enjoy church.
Get into Raw now. January 30th, 2006, from the TD Waterhouse Arena in Orlando. Part of a super show.
Yes.
Because SmackDown went from Florida to Japan to Thailand back to Georgia. So
what is the point?
Yeah, it's a bad schedule.
Jesus Christ. Engine leader backstage opened up the show. Edge says last night was a fluke. He wasn't supposed to lose the title to Cena. It's not going to be remembered in the course of history anyway, though, because he's not waiting until WrestleMania or Saturday night's main event on March 18th. He's looking for his rematch tonight. He's not going to be a transitional champion.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And then we get the actual intro to the show. And then Vince comes out, guaranteed Sean's luck would run out the Royal Rumble. And it did run out. He wants everyone to give it up for Shane, which the Shane stuff, very funny to watch in present day because, yes, you know, Vince says he can do whatever he wants. He runs the show. Michaels comes out and, you know, he wants to just attack Vince, but if he does that, he'll be fired. But and then if he gets fired, you know, Vince will sue him and Vince will win. You know, Sean and Vince go back to the old days. So maybe they should kind of go back like Vince wants to, but Sean loves his wife and kids too much for that. Vince says, it sounds like Sean is screwed.
Well, I love Sean, my wife. I love my wife. Sorry.
Sean wants to appeal to the business side of Vince, though, and do things the old-fashioned way, so they should just have a match. Vince is unsure. Then he says if he gets back in the ring, it'll be on his terms, not Sean's. And then, you know, as Vince is leaving, Shane comes out and hits Sean with a chair in the back.
Yes. So, moving forward here, after that segment, Todd Grisham asked Shane McMahon why he attacked Shawn Michaels on back-to-back nights. Shane said that nobody disrespects the McMahon family. We move on to Snitsky versus the returning Rob Van Dam, who has his first TV match in quite some time, because last time that he was on WWE TV before the Rumble was, I believe, after One Night Stand when he got drafted and he was on Carlito's Cabana. And Carlito had attacked him. I'm surprised that they did not pivot to that immediately, but we'll see him next week. So they kind of go, you know, 50-50 or whatever, which is kind of weird. But, you know, eventually Van Dam got the win, so they got from point A to point B anyway. And then last week, and then in the back, Goldust is making Shelton's mother uncomfortable by rubbing her shoulders. And then Maria was with Triple H, who said Triple H came very close to winning the Royal Rumble last night, but he got eliminated by Rey Mysterio. Triple H says that he took care of business and he's supposed to believe Rey Mysterio beat him. No, he can't take it out on Rey, but he's going to take it out on Chavo Guerrero tonight. And Triple H got the win after a 15-minute match with Chavo Guerrero. I mean, they had to fill time, I guess, but that's quite the ask.
Yeah, we didn't need to do that.
It's not like this is Triple H versus either Chris Jericho or Taka Michinoku in 2000.
Yeah. Carlito is trying to smooth things over with Chris Masters, his tag title match later tonight. And eventually Chris Masters just slaps him, says they're even now. We get into their match here. You know, they're working together pretty well. Kane ends up in the master lock, but Big Show saves him, and they double choke slam Masters to retain.
Yes. And then Carlito came out on WWE Eliminated. which I continue to forget was a thing, but they really did make this a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he got in the ref's face. RVD came out, beat him up. And after the break, Van Dam told Maria that he has unfinished business with Carlito. He's no one's stepping stone.
Yeah. We move on to Shelton Benjamin against Goldust, which, you know, in another universe.
Like a fun match in another universe, yeah. Mad decent.
Yeah, Shelton gets the win with T-Bone Suplex. Nice to see Goldust back.
Yes.
Big Dustin Rhodes fan. Shelton's hanging out outside the bathroom waiting for his mom. Meanwhile, Ric Flair is parting with Divas. Shelton's ready to get his Intercontinental title back, but Rick says that Shelton won't because he's a mama's boy. That's not, just kind of rude.
Yeah. And then Mickie James is here for a celebration of Trish Stratus. Trish came out and said that she's not here to celebrate, however, to just get things straight. Before she can go on, Mickie brings out the Spirit Squad. They want Trish to tell Mickie she loves her too. Ashley comes out, says that Trish does not love Mickie and she's a psycho. Ashley speared her and Trish pulled her off, and Mickie did a spin kick on Ashley as she thinks Trish helped her on purpose and really does care about her.
Yeah.
Where is this going to go?
Mickie's very good at this.
Yes, she is.
That's my takeaway from watching this. Yeah. She did a great job.
This is actually, this was a great angle. This is actually better on a rewatch.
Mm-hmm. Then we get to Edge against Cena for the WWE title. Late in the match, there's a ref bump, and Edge hits a low blow, tells Lita to bring the title in, but Cena gets Edge up for the FU, and Lita kind of hits Edge with the title. Cena just turns him right into it, instead of hitting Cena, but it says the ref is getting up, so he gets a disqualification, so he was probably supposed to stay down longer, because everyone was scrambling after that happened, including commentary.
Yeah.
They'll make it work, but I think the ref got up too early, and now Edge has a shot at another match, which we'll get into in a little bit.
Yes.
That was Raw.
It was Raw. Well, let's move to SmackDown, also in Orlando at the TD Waterhouse Center, right?
Yep.
That's what I thought. Of course, we'll break for sports in between here, and it makes sense too because Super Bowl was on Sunday.
Yes.
For that, Teddy Long is here to open the show. And No Way Out, we'll see The Undertaker versus Kurt Angle for the World Heavyweight title. However, the biggest surprise of the Royal Rumble was Rey Mysterio winning it. Ray came out to the ring in the lowrider, said he hoped that he made Eddie proud, and he hopes that he makes him proud when he goes to WrestleMania and wins the title. Before he gets far too into it, though, Randy Orton came out and said that Ray does not belong in this position. Randy does. This, of course, is foreshadowing a infamous moment here in just a matter of moments. There must have been some divine intervention at the Rumble because there's no way that Ray could have won on his own. Ray said, intervention or not, he eliminated Randy. Randy said that in an actual match, he would crush him. So he challenged him for his WrestleMania spot. Ray looked up to see what he should do. And Randy Orton said that Eddie is not in heaven. He's in hell.
Yeah.
This is not a good one.
It's kind of
What's the story of like getting Vicky's approval for this? Did they, or did Chavo be like, yeah, no?
And I don't know.
Even though that's probably like not accurate.
Probably just went to Chavo, or they're like, oh, Eddie would have been fine with this, but like I think Vicky and the kids are at No Way Out, so like they're clearly going to factor in. I mean, Vicky's going to factor in a big way, in a few months, but like you would have to. If I had to guess, Vicky was probably like, oh, that's what he would have wanted. That's just kind of the kind of line that the family uses when they do stuff like this, which maybe, it's uncomfortable. Yeah. I would rather not do it. You don't have to do it. Like,
yeah, you really don't. This was, off a storyline. And, thankfully, Ray at the end wins it all because it takes away the stench of possibly bookering this whole whole angle, but and Randy really, it took him a really long time to get over the stink of that. And this is at a period of time where the public perception of Randy Orton is not good, and a lot of that is self-inflicted. I'm pretty sure that this wasn't, but he has to be the one to deliver the line. He's just doing his job. You know, it's not helping him from that public perception standpoint. So, you know, it really, it didn't necessarily hurt the company. Obviously, the company kept moving. If anybody, it hurt Randy.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You know, definitely. And I mean,
go ahead.
This isn't even, I mean, this is the start of a pretty bumpy road for him, because in 2 months he gets popped for, I believe, steroids or something.
Yeah.
I know he has suspension. I mean, I don't know if it was, I don't know if it was actually.
I think the steroids. I want to say the steroids were 2017.
Yeah.
Because that's when that's when the Sports Illustrated shit came out. I want to say 2006. Was it weed that he got popped
for? I believe it was weed that he got popped for. Because I know he has a match with Kurt on SmackDown as part of the King of the Ring tournament. It was a qualifier or whatever. I know Kurt makes him tap, and then he doesn't appear because I know he got suspended for some reason. Because the next time we see him is prior to, I believe, One Night Stand 2, because he faces Kurt.
Yeah.
Unprofessional, quote-unquote unprofessional conduct. So not sure if it was ever stated exactly what, but I believe it was.
I mean, it could be.
It could be any number,
of things that we've heard over the years.
Right, exactly. You know? Randy was a dick. Randy will tell you he's a dick.
If it was... if it was weed, he may or may not have admitted that on Raw.
Yeah.
In the Quiz Bowl challenge, which, by the way, Chad Gable fucking rules.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, they don't have to go this route, but they do. So,
yeah,
you know, then we get Eminem and the Mexicools for the tag titles. Jimmy Corderas is yelling at Eminem outside the ring, and Super Crazy did like a springboard off of him onto them, which was cool. Really enjoy Eminem. Good team.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Eminem's wonderful. It's amazing how he can just transition from rap to music. Like, he just came out with a greatest hits album. First off, like, have a greatest hits album less than 10 years into your reign. It's pretty fucking impressive. And then to just go to SmackDown, win the tag team titles by himself. And then it's just a wonderful feat. Congratulations, yeah. Eminem. You're the shit. Enjoy Sunday. I hope you enjoy it. Only time Detroit's going to see a Super Bowl.
Super Crazy got a hot tag, and they did a really good false finish where he flipped Nitro onto Mercury, and eventually the ref is distracted again, and Super Crazy goes up for the moonsault, but Melina hits him with her boot and he falls, and Eminem retain. Charmel and Booker in Teddy Long's office. Booker's injury was aggravated in the Royal Rumble, so he can't defend his title tonight against Benoit. Teddy Long says it's fine, he can pick a substitute, but if the substitute loses, Booker loses the title.
So who is Booker going to pick?
Yeah.
Hopefully not Orlando Jordan or something ridiculous like that. JBL's in the ring. He's a wrestling guy, and he deserves more respect instead of feuding with the Boogeyman. He's a wrestler and wants to wrestle instead of facing the Boogeyman, who I believe the other day posted that he was signing a contract again.
He got a Legends deal.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him, especially since we saw how everything went for him in Tough Enough, and then with all this.
Mm-hmm.
So really, good for him.
Yeah.
Legitimately. Anyways, so Lashley came out and stared JBL down as a tease, but Lashley has a match at the moment, and he squashes one of the dicks, and JBL then hit a clothesline from hell on.
Yeah. Well.
So we're doing Lashley, JBL.
Undertaker's here. We'd like Kurt Angle to come to the ring. Kurt has the one thing Undertaker would like. Kurt's not scared of the Undertaker. They don't have a lot in common, but when the bell rings, Kurt doesn't have a soul either. That's a
fucking awesome line.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
So good.
Kurt's not going to rest in peace. He's going to break Undertaker's ankle in pieces. It's not as good of a line, but you know.
No, he should have just stuck with the bar.
Undertaker says Kurt will rest in peace, and the gong hits, and the lights go out, and Undertaker disappears. So, spooky.
Spooky. We come back. It's time for a United States Championship match as Chris Benoit is facing a familiar face to both him and Booker, Finlay. And of course, Booker and Charmel are on commentary here. They pretty much spent the entire time beating the crap out of each other, which that's a Finlay match for you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that. Benoit put Finlay in the crossface. Booker distracted the ref. Charmel hit Benoit with Booker's crutch, but the referee saw, so we got a DQ. Finlay and Booker beat Benoit up after. I had no problem with this.
No,
this was about pretty much what they had to do here, because obviously you can't have Finlay lose this early on, and Benoit wasn't winning the title, so... Just keep everyone happy and afloat. No one loses anything from this segment.
Yeah. It's also a rematch of Slamboree 1998.
Correct. It is. And then Daivari and Mark Henry say that Mark Henry did not lose to Kurt Angle. A steel chair and a steel turnbuckle beat Mark Henry. Mm-hmm. Okay. Booker and Sherman went back to the locker room, but the Boogeyman was there, so they run away.
Yes.
A sign of things to come.
Gregory Helm says that he is the cruiserweight division, greatest cruiserweight alive today. Nunzio comes up and challenges him to a match next week. William Regal and Paul Burchill tell Teddy Long they don't want to be a tag team anymore. Palmer Cannon understands because, you know, Regal's ancestry traces back to royalty and Burchill's traces back to pirates. So he's going to embrace his roots and become a pirate. So good for Paul Burchill.
You get some good velocity content out of this, I believe.
And yeah.
Some more fun stuff, too. So we got our main event tag of Rey Mysterio and Kurt Angle against Mark Henry and Randy Orton. Rey and Angle would be a great tag team, by the way.
Yeah.
If this was like a couple years ago, even, I know they were feuding. They've always kind of been rivals, but Rey and Angle would have been a great tag team.
Absolutely.
So Angle put the ankle lock on Mark Henry, and then Randy came in to break it up. And Kurt put it on him instead. Daivari, however, distracted the ref. Henry chop locked him. Really fun sequence in this match at that point. Rey hit the 619. On Randy Orton. However, Mark Henry punched him before he went for the West Coast pop. Angle took Henry out. Daivari went to attack Angle. Angle chased him out of the building. So we are just left with Randy Orton and Rey Mysterio. Do not mind that at all as the consequence for this, because I mean, Angle and Henry have their business, but this is not Angle's priority. The priority right now, as evidenced in the first segment of the night, is Randy Orton and Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
So Randy rolled Rey up for the win eventually. And said he has as much a chance of beating him as Eddie does coming back to life, also uncalled for.
Yeah, you know.
The only thing that I will say with regards to this, for as tacky as this is, it's very tacky. I will at least say that Cole and Taz selling it as Randy Orton being a piece of shit is good stuff.
Yes.
Because they went really in on that, and I appreciated that part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was SmackDown. So yeah, we're through the first week here. So
we are through the first week here. So that means we're here to talk about Super Bowl Sunday. Our Pro Football Hall of Fame class. We have six new members. First time candidates, Troy Aikman, Warren Moon, and Reggie White are selected alongside veterans committee candidates, Rayfield Wright and the late John Madden now, and also Harry Carson, who earned his selection in his seventh year as a finalist for the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
That was Troy Aikman's first year, really.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess he retired for a minute. 2001, right?
Yeah, he retired in 2000 or 2001, one of the two.
Oh, okay. I mean, I guess we're still in that stage. Yeah, it's kind of Reggie White's bittersweet because he had just passed away.
Mm-hmm.
From the day that it happened, that was still pretty crazy. Yeah. I don't know much to say about that class.
Yeah,
it's a good class.
Yeah,
I'll say that.
Yeah.
So moving on to the Super Bowl at Ford Field in Detroit, first and only time I believe that they were ever at Ford Field.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The Pittsburgh Steelers defeated the Seattle Seahawks 21-10. A 75-yard touchdown run by Willie Parker, as well as a 43-yard touchdown pass from Antoine Randle-El to Super Bowl MVP Hines Ward, helped the Steelers win their fifth NFL championship, which joined the Cowboys and 49ers as the most of all time.
I'm going to keep it real with you. Do you remember anything else about that Super Bowl other than the Antoine Randle-El touchdown pass?
I remember the refs being really bad.
Well, okay, other than, I mean like plays, significant plays.
No, just the Randle-El touchdown pass and the Willie Parker run.
Yeah.
That's it.
I don't even remember the Willie Parker run. Since you mentioned it now, it's jogging back in my memory. It was a touchdown run, right? That's the reason why he won. Did he win MVP or did Hines win MVP?
Ward won MVP.
Okay.
Parker, I believe that was the longest run in Super Bowl history. It passed Marcus Allen's that he had against Washington.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The first takeaway from the Super Bowl is don't let the resume fool you. Big Ben had arguably the worst quarterback showing of Super Bowl history. Flat out garbage.
Yeah.
And he should thank his lucky stars. He had a defense I was willing to hold. Tim Hasselbeck and Sean Alexander, who I think Sean Alexander is coming off of an MVP, or this is an MVP season for Sean Alexander. They would hold them to 10 points in the Super Bowl. It's pretty fucking, you know, Big Ben better had bought all the folks on that defense Rolexes for saving his ass.
Yeah.
If only they had saved his ass in those bathrooms. Jerome Bettis. Congratulations to Jerome Bettis. Really, the reason that he is in the Hall of Fame, he ain't getting in the Hall of Fame without that ring. I'm going to keep it a buck with you.
Yeah.
Hines Ward, though. Is Hines Ward a Hall of Famer?
I mean,
I think he's borderline.
I
wouldn't be mad if he got in. I wouldn't be mad if he didn't.
I think he can. You know, they had a problem with wide receivers a couple of years ago, but they've gotten, you know, most of them in. So you can start kind of, you know, now the log jams cleared up a little bit. You could put some more of them in. I think it's just a, you know, convenient time for him to be up for it.
Agree. Mm-hmm. Agree.
You know, yeah, I could see it.
And this, I believe, is actually somewhat of a historic Super Bowl, because if I'm not mistaken, this was the last Super Bowl on ABC.
It was. Yeah,
because I know
say 2026.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so they'll go about 20 years without having a Super Bowl. And this is obviously the last time that Michaels and Madden are also on ABC.
Yes.
They moved to NBC.
Mm-hmm.
So some fun media rights stuff there. But yes, let's move to the second week here. As we move along to the week that was. The top five songs in America changed up a little bit. Number one and number two stayed the same. Check On It by Beyonce and Slim Thug, and then Grills at number two. But then we have a complete different shuffle here. So I'll start with Be Without You by Mary J. Blige went from 4 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
You're Beautiful by James Blunt went from 8 to 5. And jumping from 86 all the way up to 4th. It was a song by the likes of Zac Efron, Andrew Seeky, and Vanessa Ann Hudgens called Breaking Free.
I cannot tell you that I've ever seen High School Musical or heard any other song from High School Musical that's not Get Your Head in the Game. Or all in this together. Those are the only two songs I've ever heard from that.
The first one's not bad. Like, it's not a bad movie. I didn't see any of the other ones, but I did watch the first one, you know, when it came out. It's not bad. You know, the music's good. Yeah. But that's crazy that song got so high on the actual legitimate charts. Yeah.
Yeah. Damn. So the top five movies in America mostly remain the same. Number five was once again Underworld Evolution. Number four was Brokeback Mountain. Nanny McPhee dropped from two to three. Big Mama's House 2 dropped from 1 to 2. And taking number one this week, grossing over $24 million, nearly 25, When a Stranger Calls.
Bad.
Bad.
What'd you say?
I don't remember this movie.
When a Stranger Calls, not good.
I remember the movie coming out, but I don't remember anything about it.
Yeah, it just, it was fine. Like, you know, it was a remake of a horror movie. They didn't go, like, all in on it or whatever. It was, you know.
But also, most horror movies are bad.
Well, that's true, too.
Problem is, I'm looking here at these actors and actresses, and I don't recognize.
Yeah, I know Tessa Thompson's in it, and that's about it in terms of people who.
Oh, Brian Gerege.
Yeah,
is in it. He's been in some stuff.
Yeah, the guy from the guy from Jarhead.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. And Hurt Locker as well.
Yes. Yeah, it was not very.
Oh, Agent Coulson's in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Maybe. Maybe I'll watch.
Yeah, but we can get into Raw. February 6, 2006 from Atlanta, the Phillips Arena.
Yes.
We get a video to open the show, and they don't really explain what's going on, but at the end of the video, we find out that 8 Raw superstars are going to compete for a shot at the WrestleMania main event against John Cena. So that was pretty cool.
WrestleMania 22 tournament.
Yeah. Maria's in the ring for an interview with Edge. She wants to know why Lita hit Edge with the title. Edge told Maria to shut up. Edge says next week on Raw, there's going to be a big match facing Cena again for the title because the DQ finished last week. Also, Raw's on Thursday next week because the dog show.
Oh, I thought it was the Olympics, honestly.
No, it's the dog show.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Yes. Yeah, I thought, oh, it's February
2006.
It must be the Olympics.
Edge says everyone's been asking.
So what day is SmackDown? Is it airing live on Tuesday?
Yeah, SmackDown's on Fridays now.
Oh,
yeah, so that week they just did it on Thursday and Friday.
Yeah. Edge says everyone's been asking why Lita did that. Said because it's they're four moves ahead of everyone at all time. You know, since Lita hit Edge when he was about to lose, then she knew that he would get another title shot. You know, good enough job explaining it.
Yeah.
Lita is mad at Maria because she introduced Edge as the former WWE champion, but he is the future WWE champion. And then they go to leave, but Hacksaw Jim Duggan comes out. Wants to be the special referee next week in the Edge and Cena match. And they go back and forth for a little bit. Hacksaw calls Lita a hoe. And then Edge sends him from the ring, but John Cena comes out, saves Maria from these two, and we're going to have a match later. Edge and Maria, or Edge and Lita against John Cena and Maria.
This is not the only time we'll see these people.
Yeah.
So we get our first Road to WrestleMania 22 tournament matchup between Chris Masters and Kane. Kane came off the turnbuckle for a clothesline, however, Masters countered by almost locking in the master lock. Kane, however, evaded it. Nice little sequence there.
Yeah.
Eventually, Masters pulled off the upset win with the ropes to advance in the tournament.
Yeah.
So start things off with a bit of an upset there. Edge and Lita were concerned that there was going to be a special referee next week. He thinks it should be Lita. But Vince says that that's not happening. They were talking to Vince at the time. Vince said that the winner of this tag team match will pick the special referee. So we have some stakes for the main event.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get Ashley Massaro versus Mickie James. Trish is once again the special referee. We are doing a complete redo of the Rumble. Mickie accidentally knocked Trish down. Ash took advantage. That was, it was a bit of an interesting sequence to get the 1-2-3. And obviously, Mickie James is very distraught. Not as distraught as I was when I came across this next segment. James apologized to Trish in the back. Trish said that it was fine. Accidents happen. Said that she loves Trish as a friend and is her idol and inspiration. And then, probably one of the most unrealistic castings they've ever had, ever. Like, ever.
Yeah.
This schlub, he's a schlub, walks over and he's Trish's dick. And then they leave.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know.
No disrespect, but come on, what are we doing?
Yeah, exactly. Shelton leaves his mother alone for a minute. Eugene shows up and tries to take her wig off, like in Big Mama's House 2. Get our first WrestleMania rewind, where Pete Rose in Boston work in the crowd and then gets his ass beat by Kane.
Great segment. How about it?
Yeah, Pete Rose is great.
It is from Bill Buckner, but he couldn't bend down to pick it up. I will always appreciate Red Sox slander.
We get another match in the Road to WrestleMania 22 tournament, Triple H against Ric Flair. And it was good. Flair got the figure four locked in late. Triple H got to the ropes, and then Flair was kind of chopping him and then just walked right into a pedigree. Triple H got the victory. So, kind of figured that. But Maria's freaking out to Cena about their match tonight. Cena calms her down by kissing her and then leaves.
Some weird shit going on in this Raw.
Big Show's set to be in action against Shawn Michaels. But before the match, Vince comes out and says it's Shawn's lucky night because Shane's not around. Next week is the Shawn Michaels retirement party. And since Shawn's retiring next week, he doesn't need to be in the tournament anymore. So we get Shelton Benjamin against the Big Show instead.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah. And so they end up outside the ring, and Big Show kind of press slam Shelton from the outside of the ring to the inside, which you don't see often. That was pretty cool. And Shelton's mom is yelling at Big Show and slaps him on the back. And he says, "Don't touch me." And then she passes out, and Big Show goes back in the ring and pins Shelton. And as it turns out, his mother's in some strife here. So I got EMTs and stuff. It's very serious.
Yes.
Very serious moment.
Yes.
I guess she just, that kind of had a shelf life anyway. You can't do too much with that. We talked about it when she came in. Like, good for her getting work, but she just didn't fit in there. I can't imagine she made like a ton of friends, and that's not anyone's fault.
Carlito said that RVD kept attacking him over something that happened months ago. That's fine though, because he will take care of RVD in advance in the tournament. When we get to that match, world outside the ring before the bell actually rang. Good start.
Yeah.
you know, you're trying to sell the fact that the two don't like each other. You're not going to start with a freaking lockup.
They would now.
But... I know, it's stupid. Carlito brought a chair into the ring. RVD hit the Van Damminator, and then the Frog Splash for the win.
See, this should have just been his first match back.
Yeah, it should have. I agree. You didn't even have to... Honestly, if you just did a promo with him last week to set this up, job well done.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to have him face this. I get the upward momentum thing, but like, you can just start off with this. Why not?
Yeah. And then it's time for a main event. Edge and Lita are in action against John Cena and Maria. Lita ends up in the ring alone with Cena. She flashes him to try not get attacked. And Edge spears her by accident. Maria comes in for the cover. They get the win. And John Cena says next week, the special referee will be Mick Foley. That's fun.
Very.
And that was Raw.
That was Raw, yes. So since it's the second week here, I'm going to see if there's anything notable in the world of sports. Doesn't really look like it. Let's see. Oh, well, that's interesting. Former NHL player and Phoenix Coyotes assistant coach Rick Tocchet, I believe that's how you pronounce it, is implicated.
Rick Tocchet.
We're talking. Yeah, there we go. Tocchet is implicated for being in charge of the gambling ring that included several NHL players as well as Wayne Gretzky's wife, Janet Jones.
Yeah.
And thus the start of many Wayne Gretzky gambling jokes that one co-host on here made for many years.
That's true. Also, we didn't talk about it, but like 2 days before the Super Bowl, Howard Schultz said he was going to sell or move the Sonics.
Oh, that's not great.
Yeah. So he was really playing hardball. It was the first time that he said that they were going to do that. Yeah. So, dude, you know.
Unfortunately, we know how that ends. So on Wednesday, February 8th, 2006, ESPN announced that they have hired Mike Tirico, Joe Theismann, and PTI's Tony Kornheiser to be the announcers of Monday Night Football, which will air on the cable sports network starting next year. Of course, it means that Al Michaels and John Madden are going to be on the Sunday Night NFL broadcast on NBC. In exchange for Michaels, NBC gave ABC and ESPN expanded Olympic highlights, coverage of the Friday Ryder Cup matches starting in 2008, and Disney gave the rights to Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, a character created by Walt Disney and owned by Universal.
Yeah, this is like they talk about trade deadline. This is like, you know, sending not even Kevin Durant. This is like sending PJ Tucker for the rights to some Ukrainian draft pick from 1997 that clearly is never going to play ever again. You know, Al Michaels is wonderful, and for him to have an entire shelf life of close to 20 years with NBC. After ABC, because he went through a lot of shit with ABC. Like, most of those years where he was on Monday Night Football, Monday Night Football was dead.
Yeah.
And there was nothing, you know, there was nothing really keeping that brand alive until John Madden became available, because John Madden said, hey, I want to work the marquee game of the week. And so when he was able to do that, that finally put Al Michaels really in the number one spot. Mm-hmm. So when they ditched the rights, which you could say it was a smart move for ABC, to be honest, because I want to say a year later or so, Dancing with the Stars becomes popular. Now you have something on Monday nights, Tuesday nights, you know, when the Bachelorette ain't playing, that is super popular and that's getting massive ratings. So your sports ratings really have jumped up now with ESPN boosting that brand to what it is now, where you have ESPN Plus and you know, rights fees out the wazoo. So, you know, it wound up being beneficial before for both ESPN, ABC, Disney, and also NBC. NBC had been out of the game for so long, and now you come back. Now you have Sunday Night Football, which I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. You know, I give a fuck about Sunday Night Football. It was an extra football game if you wanted to watch an extra football game at night. Now it's the most watched television program, period.
Mm-hmm.
Year.
Yeah, exactly.
So good win all around. It'll be interesting now that this is kind of like the first big NFL TV rights move. The Thursday nights going to Amazon. That's going to be what I'm looking forward to a lot. I'm, you know, a media rights nerd, so I pay attention to awful announcing a lot. And it'd be interesting to see what they're able to build for that. Rumors about Troy Aikman, and there's been rumors about Al actually going over to Thursday nights, which would make sense.
It'd be fine. I mean, Mike Tirico's ready, you know. Mm-hmm. If you do want to just bump him up, I mean, you could even just you put Drew Brees there too. He's fine. Like, he's not my favorite, but I think Drew Brees does a good enough job. I don't know if Tirico and Collinsworth is a pairing that would really work out.
Tirico
all that
and Tirico, Brees and Collinsworth. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I'm not the highest on three-man booths, but I think if you do a three-man booth, it's good that you have Collinsworth, who has ample experience and one worked with Aikman and Buck when he was at Fox. So I wouldn't be mad if they go that route. I forgot where I was about to go with this, but three-man booth would work out over there. Oh yeah, and like, you know, Jack Collinsworth has been pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's like your Tirico on the NFL side, or if it's Maria Taylor could just slot right in Tirico's spot, and Jack can be with Chris Sims on the field doing that. I think that works out perfectly.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
Session plan. Are we heading to SmackDown now?
Yeah. Yeah. SmackDown from February 10th, 2006 in Columbus, Georgia. We open with a fatal four-way number one contender U.S. title match between Chris Benoit, Orlando Jordan, JBL, and Matt Hardy. Benoit gets Matt to tap the crossface. So we're doing Benoit and Booker again. Booker says, you know, he's not healthy, he can't go. And Teddy Long finally just tells him, you know, you have 9 days to get healthy before No Way Out. So
yep.
Tired of Booker's shenanigans.
Yes.
Crystal goes to interview JBL about what happened out there, and he yells at her, says he should have won, also should be world champion. Bobby Lashley comes up and challenges him to a match at No Way Out, and Jillian Hall accepts on JBL's behalf, which JBL's not super happy about.
Correct.
Melina's backstage, trying to recruit Matt Hardy to join M&M. We'll see how that goes. And M&M is in action against London and Kendrick. It's an open challenge. London and Kendrick came out and answered it, and M&M got the win with a snapshot. You know, pretty standard.
Basic stuff.
Randy Orton apologizes for what he said last week about Eddie Guerrero, but then goes to the ring and says some more stuff, and then Ray comes out and kicks his ass again.
You should point out that he came out in the lowrider.
Yes. Yes.
And they were left wondering what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
He was like setting the record straight.
Yeah.
He had Eddie's book out. He was saying that, you know, he was an addict or whatever, and then Ray came out and beat the crap.
Yes.
While Colin Taz cheered him on.
Yes. Speaking of Randy, Bob Orton was released from his WWE contract, which, I mean, you know, obviously, but it did pop up. Also,
hepatitis situation. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
They also released the Heartthrobs this week. So,
oh, yeah.
You know,
forgot
they existed. We get Gregory Helms against Nunzio for the Cruiserweight title. Kid Cash watches from the stage. You know, he wasn't pinned in the Royal Rumble match, so he is owed a rematch, which I think is coming next week.
Yes.
Helms gets the win with the Shining Wizard, and really fun match. You know,
really
they're focusing on the cruiserweights again, even a little bit, and it's good to see, because mm-hmm. the past couple of years they haven't really.
I agree.
They do a minis match, so they're doing that again. Finley comes out and beats them both up, which is very funny.
Yes,
considering
it is.
Booker and Charmel go to leave, but someone filled the trunk of their car with worms.
I wonder who that was.
Yeah. And then it is time for a main event already. Not a very action-packed SmackDown.
No, this is pretty formulaic.
So we get Undertaker against Mark Henry. And late in the match, Undertaker's going for the choke slam, and M&M come out, attack him for the disqualification. Daivari gets choke slammed, and then M&M and Henry overpower him for a little bit. But Kurt Angle comes out for the save, and Teddy Long says next week we'll get M&M and Mark Henry against Undertaker and Kurt Angle, which should be good.
Should be.
Yeah.
I agree.
That was SmackDown. Again, the second one just not very busy.
Yeah. King of the Ring? Is there one?
I guess Ray again for standing up for his friend like that. You know?
Van Damme
came back.
Win two matches.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is kind of, you know, coming off of an ACL and doing great things. Hey, look at you, Joe Burrow. Go out and win a championship on Sunday. My bank account will love it. Any final thoughts?
No, I don't think so. I'm looking forward to No Way Out next week. It's actually a pretty good show. Especially Undertaker and Angle, which I don't like a ton of like big Undertaker matches, but that one is very good. So
yes.
All right. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week. We'll talk about Elimination Chamber. Rob is at RobLomino31. Chris is at Chris of Novak. I am at Cameron Santo on Twitter, at Barbara's Chair Net on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram / Barbara's Chair Digital, or Facebook.com/Barbara's Chair Digital. Still working on my computer to kind of get the top 25 together, but once it's ready, you guys will hear it. You guys will get the list on Twitter and all that good jazz. Patreon.com/Barbara's Chair Network is where you can go for that. You can also listen to the newest episode of 2 Minute Drill, where we preview this upcoming Sunday's big game. Thank y'all for joining us. Rob and Chris, 9 years. We'll see you guys next week. Take care.